Whether you operate one forklift or thousands, one location or hundreds, the new My Toyota customer portal can help you optimize your operation and material handling equipment. This one-stop, free-to-use platform is designed to help you take control of your information and make smarter decisions, all at the touch of a button. Register and access your data today at my.toyotaforklift.com. That's my.toyotaforklift.com.
Today's warehouse needs to keep inventory moving smoothly and quickly. Meet these challenges with on-demand warehouse labeling from Brother Mobile Solutions. Our mobile and industrial printers will help optimize your operations to achieve the speed, reliability, and durability your warehouse needs. With easy integration for existing warehouse technology, convenient portability, and upfront affordability, Brother Mobile Solutions is at your side when it comes to warehouse labeling. Try one for free today by visiting brothermobilesolutions.com/new warehouse or click the link in the show notes. That's brothermobilesolutions.com/new warehouse to try one for free today.
The New Warehouse Podcast, hosted by Kevin Lawton, is your source for insights and ideas from the distribution, transportation, and logistics industry. A new episode every Monday morning brings you the latest from industry experts and thought leaders. And now, here's Kevin.
Hey, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast, bringing you a new episode today. Today's episode, I am going to be joined by Joe Oliero. He is the VP of Sales and Chief Real Estate Officer for Wagner Logistics, a 3PL based out of Kansas on the Missouri side. I think I got that right, on the Kansas City, Missouri side. So we're going to talk a little bit about Wagner Logistics. And since Joe is the Chief Real Estate Officer, we're going to find out exactly what that means. And we're also going to find out what's going on in the warehousing market and talk a little bit about Wagner's approach to automation and robotics, as it's becoming such a prevalent thing in our industry. So, Joe, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. Excited to dish it out today.
Definitely. Oh, we're dishing out today. Okay, let's get it then. All right, it's good to have you on here. Definitely good to get you on the show here and learn more about Wagner Logistics. So tell us a little bit, give us just a little brief overview of what actually does Wagner Logistics do.
Yeah, so Wagner started out 1946, so we're going into our 78th year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Math correctly. Mm-hmm. And started out as Wagner Cartage Service, and it's evolved into what we have today at Wagner Logistics. So we occupy roughly 7 million square feet across 24 different markets, and we cater to manufacturers, groups that make a tangible good, mostly non-hazmat. We do handle some hazardous materials in specific locations, but mostly non-hazmat. And we help manufacturers as they bring in raw materials. We store those in the DC, shuttle those to the plant. And as they come out as finished goods, we store those in the DC as well, and then send those on down the supply chain. So we've done that for all kinds of different industries. So we're heavy in paper. We've worked with automotive, energy, sticks, you name it, we've probably seen it. But we're in 13, 14 different states, and we're growing rapidly. So we doubled the company from 2015 to 2020, and we're on a pace now to redouble again over the next 3 to 5 years.
Oh, wow.
All just contingent upon how quickly we can take down new locations and I guess how quickly our customers are taking advantage of growth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great to hear certainly that you've been doubling and a lot of years in the business, Wagner there. So it's great to hear you're bringing that experience on here too. And obviously you just mentioned how quickly you can get space and take over space, but you're the chief real estate officer. So I think you're the guy that's in charge of that, right? So tell us exactly what is a chief real estate officer?
You know, I should probably disclose, I think I'm the only chief real estate officer that I've ever discovered. So
that's why I'm asking.
Well, I think, you know, title aside, I think I'm in a unique position here at Wagner. I I used to be an outside consultant on their behalf, helping them run and manage their real estate portfolio. So taking down new leases, new spaces in different markets, and then had an opportunity to come in-house and be a part of that organizational change. And, you know, they always say, be careful when you see how the sausage is made, but it's been a really, really neat opportunity to see the organization from the inside. And then, you know, putting my sales hat on, it's also afforded us an opportunity to achieve somewhat of a competitive advantage when we approach real estate from the sales side, because real estate and third-party logistics growth is incredibly intertwined.
Yeah.
Knowing what buildings are available, knowing what leases around you are coming available allows for additional growth. And knowing what markets to go into is also important. So we've taken an approach where we're targeting, I'm going to say, 10 different markets where we want to grow into. And that's allowed us to really become the expert in those markets on what's going on with our competition, what kind of manufacturers and capabilities within those markets that overlay against our network of locations. And that allows us to offer multi-customer warehouse locations where we can then offer shared equipment, shared space, and shared labor to like what I would call like-kind customers, that not every customer requires different MHE or different skilled labor sets. I think it's put us in a good position to take advantage of the information that we have in front of us. It's just narrowing down what's most important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting the approach there and kind of looking at the different markets, as you said, and knowing that, like, okay, these are markets we want to grow into, and then looking like to see, like, okay, where's the opportunity currently, or what opportunity is popping up here, and how can we take advantage of that, and like you said, do some shared resources and see how does that work out for us. So really interesting, and obviously, you know, it's working for you guys if you guys are doubling your business, right? So
I would just also say, you know, it's also important to have a really strong real estate partner, somebody, and you could say, and we'll dive into a real estate tangent here, but I've worked as a sole tenant rep where I'm the single point of contact for customers, but I've also worked in a network model where you leverage local expertise and a local tenant rep that really is ingrained in that market itself. And I think having a strong partner with whatever model you think works best for your business is also very important. So we're striving to mechanize that process. I used to be that process, and now we're striving to kind of take over some of those pieces and really mechanize that process. So it takes all the, I guess, takes as many of the question marks out of it as possible.
Yeah. And I think that's a great approach, because like you said, you want to take the questions out of there and make it simpler for you on the business side, and make sure that you're getting that right fit as well within those different markets and different locations that you guys are going into. So I did see something about that you guys are able to kind of find space at a reduced cost, which I think is an interesting thing, because I think, you know, anybody that's from any type of real estate anywhere at all, we always want to get a lower price, right? So I'm curious, how is that possible from your standpoint to get a reduced cost that might be lower than potentially someone else in the same business or in the industry looking at these same types of commercial spaces?
Great question. I would love to say that we have some magical process that identifies all the below market rents, and you know, it's just taking the information that we have and doing it the right way. You know, I'll give you a case in point. I think you might have seen the case study, and maybe that's kind of where this is coming from. But we had an opportunity for a renewal in California, up near Stockton and Tracy, California. And one of our dedicated facilities was coming up for renewal. We knew that there was also a submarket lease rate coming up on some space nearby. And so we also knew that the building that we were in had recently changed hands. So knowing that knowing those dynamics allowed us to really leverage a sense of competition between the property nearby that would work for us and our existing landlord. And I hope they're not listening to this, but if they are, it's okay. It worked in our favor. And I think my point is that you're not always going to get a below market deal, but mm-hmm. if you put the right information and the right processes in place to identify those things, you're basically increasing your chances for luck. Mm-hmm. And luck in my mind would be where preparation meets opportunity. So we're really just preparing ourselves so that when something does come along like that, we can execute on it.
Hmm. Interesting. And I think that's good advice too there. I mean, you know, being able to like basically have your ducks in a row. So when it's time to, you know, go for it, you can go for it. I think that makes a lot of sense and definitely interesting. So, you know, obviously you guys are looking at the market constantly, it sounds like, especially as you're looking to double growth and you're going to need space to do that, I'm sure. So, I mean, if you look at the current market and the warehousing commercial space, I mean, where are we at right now and where do you think we're kind of going in the next few years? I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, there in some aspects, some markets, it's like there's not enough space. And then in some, it's like, oh, well, maybe we overbuilt a little bit. And you know, mm-hmm. there's talk about market correction and all these different things. I mean, what do you guys see as the space? I mean, you know, you're obviously very involved in the real estate space here. So tell us a little bit about kind of where is that warehousing market at currently and where do you think it's going?
So I think from a high level, we came in post-COVID boom, mm-hmm. where a lot of inventories had been depleted, or at least just-in-time inventories. Companies went in and said, okay, well, now we need additional space. We need additional overflow space because we've received this massive increase in demand. We're not exactly sure how these trends are going to continue in consumer activity. So we need a little bit more warehouse. And they still want just in time, but they also want overflow just in case.
Yeah.
And now there's been so much development that there's a, you know, increased construction costs, increased lead times on everything between steel, concrete, equipment, man, a lot of our equipment, folks that we lease like forklifts from, they're, you know, you're lucky to find one to lease. And then the lead time on a new forklift is at least a year. Mm, yeah. So we're up against this wall where not only all these lead times and increased costs, but you've got increased costs from increased in interest rates for financing.
Right.
So it's a trickle down effect from the top that says, hey, you know, we just can't build these buildings anymore like we were. So a lot of developers around the country have cut their pipeline in half, you know, in the billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so it looked like, I'll use North Point. I don't know exactly what their pipeline was, but North Point, Prologis, Blackstone, some of these major industrial developers mm-hmm. are just saying, hey, you know, we're going to take a break. We're not going to stop developing, but we're going to take a break. And so we're in this kind of short-term lull at the moment where we've got this break. And knowing that, we're also coming up on a huge growth of onshoring coming back to the U.S. So there will be 68 different markets across North America that will require at least 10 million square feet or more of industrial space to accommodate the manufacturing coming back to the U.S. And so I don't know what's going to happen exactly, but I just know that there's enough mega projects going on right now with all the onshoring coming back. There will be another boom, and it'll either be the most expensive boom we've seen since COVID, or some kind of other market force will change and maybe make that more efficient. But
Interesting.
It's going to be an interesting 5 years for sure.
Step, step, step. Do you know how many steps your warehouse workers are taking a day? When your workers are walking, you're losing money. Endless trips to the printer or computer add up fast. Newcastle's mobile industrial carts with integrated power eliminate the walking to stationary printers and computers, keeping workers focused on high-value tasks, often doubling their output. Thousands of powered cart installations, including ones at the new warehouse's own micro-fulfillment center and in my previous jobs, prove that Newcastle customers get more done and save money. To learn more, head to NewcastleSYS.com. That's NewcastleSYS.com. Yeah, definitely. And I'm curious, I mean, do you see, as you said, some of these major developers are kind of like, you know, cutting down a little bit, taking a little break. I mean, do you think that is going to drive the rates up a little higher because there's not more newer space coming online? Or do you think it's just that, you know, they've overbuilt a little bit too much and that space just seems to be filled up now?
No, that's a great question. I think what you'll see is, you know, some of the coastal markets will go into not a recession, but things will slow down on the coasts. And what you'll see is a larger boom back into the Midwest, where you have all kinds of space to add additional warehousing, where there's a lot of additional Class B type industrial product that maybe isn't completely functionally obsolete, but it offers enough clear height to be able to keep up with demand. And in some cases, and you've already seen this in New Jersey, but you'll see developers come in and they will physically raise the roof another 5 feet to make the, you know, to allow potential tenants to take advantage of the cube. So we've already seen that on the coasts, but I think it's a pause on the coasts and an influx of activity going into the Midwest. And I guess I use Midwest loosely, really the middle part of the country from Texas up through Minnesota.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of activity going there. Cause in any of those markets, you can get to the coast within a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's interesting because, definitely, you know, here in New Jersey, like I'm like in the middle of it. I mean, it's crazy. Like my town, there's people that have signs in their yard that says like stop the warehouses and, you know, farms over warehouses. It's wild here, the development. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I mean, for you guys, for Wagner, when you're looking for space now, I mean, are you looking for a new developed space? Are you looking for older developed space? Because I know you guys do some stuff with rail too, right? So I mean, is there a lot new coming online with that has rail access, or, I mean, what does that look like?
So let me unpack the first part of that. So when we when we come into a market, we're really looking to open up a multi-customer warehouse. And typically we would go into a newer building. We wouldn't be opposed to going into an older building, but usually the efficiencies of the space with the way they're developing newer properties now, it's just much more conducive to a multi-customer warehouse between the tall clear, the clear span of all the, you know, posts throughout the support beams throughout the warehouse. And what we almost always run across in every market is the Frankenstein building, where it's, there was one building that was built back in the 40s. And then every 10 years they add, 20, 30,000 square feet on it and just kind of stitch it together. And that works occasionally, like if you don't need a good clear height or if it's mostly dead storage, but for higher volume, more attractive opportunities from our end, we want to be in a nice clean space. And when you get into food grade type opportunities, you need to take that into consideration as well.
Interesting. Yeah. I was curious about that, how you guys approach it. And I think think that, because I think one thing too that I've been hearing, and you know, I've been kind of looking for some space too myself here in Jersey, and it's like the smaller space, because you know they're building like gigantic spaces around here, like those smaller spaces and some of those older spaces as well. I mean, do you think that they're gonna find, even with more onshoring, I mean, do you think that they're gonna find like some some new life there, or are they going to eventually end up just kind of being teardowns and rebuilt to a more modern type of space like you're talking about?
We'll be back after a quick break.
You hear a lot about supply chains these days, because if the past couple years have taught us anything, it's that an efficient, well-managed supply chain is absolutely critical to keeping businesses successful and consumers happy. I'm Will Haywood, and I host a podcast called All Business, No Boundaries, where we talk about supply chains, how they work, what happens when they don't, and the innovations that are redefining what's possible in the world of logistics. Join me for insightful interviews with thought leaders and industry experts. We discuss how optimizing supply chains can break down the barriers that are holding businesses back. That's All Business, No Boundaries by DHL Supply Chain. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think it depends. And I give our engineers at our company grief all the time. It's like, well, if our slogan wasn't bring it, it would be it depends, because there's so many different factors that go into making a warehouse decision. And, and you know, clear height is always one of those. So I think anything sub 15 feet, you know, there's the real opportunity there to take that building out and either raise the roof or redevelop it completely. But it all depends on the number of manufacturers in the market, the access to highways, the number and size of dock doors that are part of the facility, and then, you know, the general condition of the slab. And you know, every building has a useful life, but some set up better than others.
Interesting. Yeah, I was curious about that, because we do see like tons of new buildings going up, and then I see like these older ones too, kind of like sitting by the wayside, like almost looking like at the new ones, like, you know, are you going to take my job, you know, something like that.
Well, so, and there's even folks taking it, you know, if we're talking about e-commerce, I mean, there's large mall developers that are taking these old indoor malls and adding a, you know, they're not seeing the traffic that they were before. So adding a small fulfillment center to support the businesses within the mall, and then other last mile needs and you know, direct to consumer fulfillment needs within that, you know, 3 to 5 miles around the building. So you're seeing a lot of repurposing of just vacant parking lots in that regard. For like manufacturer support, I think it's not as new as that, but it also depends on how many buildings are available. I mean, most markets across the country are 5% vacancy or below.
Yeah.
And it's just a function of what you can get away with.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. And so I'm curious too, I mean, you know, we talked about a lot of the real estate aspect here and the kind of the warehousing market in general, but, you know, when we talk about more modern spaces and, you know, we're also thinking about potentially being more conducive to some of the newer automation and robotics that's out there as well. So how is Wagner, you know, has it been 1946, I think you said, right? Since 1946. So it's a long time to see a lot of different evolutions in technology in the logistics space and the warehousing space. And now, you know, we're arguably at the most high tech point, I think, of that. You know, we're seeing robotics, AI, and machine learning, all different kinds of things coming into our world. So how is Wagner approaching automation and robotics?
Well, I guess I'll say it all comes down to cost, right? So the cost of all the moves in the warehouse is always top of mind with a 3PL like Wagner. We have to almost understand the customer's warehousing business better than they do, so that we can be more efficient, provide the value that they're looking to get out of us. And so we're always able to identify those opportunities for efficiency and effectiveness in a warehouse. And it comes in many different forms. So when we talk automation with customers, it's more about talking, we'll call it an automation roadmap, and saying, hey, there are opportunities for right now, you've got three long travels within the warehouse that we think we can automate that are repetitive. There are long travels within the warehouse that take forklift drivers today X amount of time to do. Yeah. And if we had a dedicated AGV that could handle that route, well, that's low hanging fruit. And so we work with a customer in Monroe, Louisiana, and we've done just that. We've taken the lifts out of two different routes. So there's AGVs that bring the raw materials into the plant, which is just through a breezeway from our warehouse. And then we also have a different kind of AGV that brings the finished goods over to a staging or drop zone. And then they're picked up from there and taken into wherever they need to go, whether it's a lot or some kind of racking position. But I think identifying those immediate moves and low hanging fruit allows for automation. And then when we're talking about roadmap, I think it's also very expensive at this point. Mm. So going to a customer and saying, hey, you need to spend $20 million. isn't always easy to swallow. They'll just kind of laugh it off and say, okay, well, I'm not doing that today. But if we can show them, hey, we're seeing labor costs escalate at 8-10% a year, eventually those costs are going to intersect with the cost of robotics and automation, and you want to really think about what we can do to bend that curve down a little bit so that we keep those costs of managing the warehouse at an even keel to mitigate your costs later on. And so we've also talked automation with some other groups, and we figured out a way to reduce a customer's footprint within their warehouse by 60% just by putting in VNA racking, which VNA stands for very narrow aisle racking. And it's expensive, but if you can reduce your footprint and put, you know, consolidate a warehouse and take that other 60% that you've just freed up and consolidate a warehouse, there's a lot of occupancy savings in that. And then you're really taking advantage of the cube that you have available.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think being able to, you know, take advantage of the space you have and maximize the utilization and optimize it as much as possible is definitely a great way to help continue your growth without maybe having to make a full transition to a new building or something like that. So really interesting. And I'm curious, as you guys are involved in, and, you know, the warehousing side and also some of the transportation side as well, we talk a lot, I think, about the automation and robotics internal to the warehouse, right? Making those internal moves like you talked about there, where you implemented some AGVs down in Louisiana. But do you see how these automation robotics are having a potential impact external from the warehouse as well, whether it's with trucks or rail or something else outside of those four walls?
We don't have a ton of visibility to automation outside. I mean, everybody talks about, you know, automated autonomous vehicles and kind of where that's going with the transportation industry. I think we see that kind of automation talk around like intermodal facilities more than anything, because you do have a lot of repetitive moves within a closed area. But when you start getting on public roadways and things like that, I you know, it's sexy to talk about autonomous vehicles and autonomous trucks, but I think we're a ways out from that. But it's neat to think about it, and obviously it would be a game changer when it comes to how quickly things can get around and the types of, I guess, transportation options we have in front of us today.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, interesting stuff, and definitely interesting to learn more about what's going on in the warehousing market from your perspective as a chief real estate officer. I think first one I ever met, so definitely an honor there. And it's good to get all the insights from you and learn more about Wagner Logistics. So if people are interested to learn more about Wagner, how can they do that?
So you can find us at WagnerLogistics.com. We are also available on LinkedIn, and we also have a Facebook and a Twitter, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Joe Oliero.
All right. With the pronunciation next to the name.
That's right. With his,
phonetically yeah, his branding. I like it. So I'll definitely put all that information at thenewwarehouse.com as well, so people can easily find it. So Joe, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
You've been listening to the New Warehouse Podcast with Kevin Lawton. Subscribe and check us out online at thenewwarehouse.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you want more content from the New Warehouse, check out our new video series called All Hands on LinkedIn. Just search for the New Warehouse on LinkedIn and follow along.